From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. All but one of the nine Democrats running for governor say the state doesn't spend enough money on public schools. They want more robust supports for schools in areas of deep poverty and more attention to training for careers, not necessarily college. Andy Green, opinion editor for the Baltimore Sun, who guides us through the candidates' points of emphasis, says it's no wonder many of the Democrats sound like they agree on everything.
One person is talking about universal pre-K. One person is talking about community college and high school. And the truth is, these are all different parts of the same answer, and they all really do stem from the recommendations that the Kerwin Commission has put out.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. We're less than 3 weeks away from the Democratic primary for governor, just 8 days away from the start of early voting. This morning, we're talking about the nine Democrats running for governor and their plans to improve education, both pre-K through 12th grade and higher education. When we spoke to all nine candidates in individual interviews over the last month, each of them identified education, or education in connection with another challenge, as the top issue in this year's campaign for governor. Leading up to the primary on June 26, we'll hear their thoughts about other issues facing Maryland, such as reducing gun violence, addressing opioid overdoses, and growing the economy. Each is trying to persuade Democrats to choose them to confront incumbent Republican Governor Larry Hogan in November. For some insight and perspective, we're joined by Baltimore Sun opinion editor Andy Green. Welcome back to On the Record.
Thanks, Sheila.
Andy, most of the Democrats running for governor say Maryland's public schools are not adequately funded, and they blame that on Governor Hogan. So set the funding scene for us.
Governor Hogan has, with a small exception in his first year in office when we were facing more severe budget problems, completely funded the educational formulas that have been in place since 2002. They were passed in the last year of the Glenn Denning administration. Now, we are in the midst of an update of the study that led to our current formulas. It's called the Kerwin Commission for short. It's the Commission on Innovation and Excellence in Education.
And it's named after former Chancellor, University Chancellor Britt Kerwin,
who is chairing the commission. And so there has been a lot of talk during the process of developing recommendations from the Kerwin Commission about what would be an adequate level of funding for education in the state of Maryland. Some consultants looked through and they calculated a figure of $2.9 billion as being where we're short right now in total across the state. Now, if you talk to Britt Kerwin, he will say, don't go to the bank with that number, because we have not finalized exactly what we're recommending. And also, we're going to be recommending not just throwing more money on, but changing the way we do things. And so the net total increase might not be anywhere close to that. So to blame Larry Hogan for not funding schools at the level of a commission that had not yet reported its recommendations is a little bit unfair.
Is it fair to point to the Kerwin Commission's initial conclusion that Maryland is sort of in the middle of the pack as public school systems go in the United States?
I think it's absolutely fair to point that out and to say—
But they blame that on Governor Hogan, too.
Well, it's back in the days of Martin O'Malley being governor, Education Week routinely ranked us as number one in the nation for education. We have slipped a few slots in that ranking subsequently, but how much stock we put in Education Week's rankings is a questionable thing.
Education Week is a
trade publication. And their evaluation deals a lot with inputs in how you fund schools. And I think a more appropriate measure and one that the Kerwin Commission is more focused on is the outputs. What kind of skills do our students graduate with? That's what we need to be looking at. Are we preparing them to be as good as the best students from the best countries in the world in their ability to compete in this global economy? And in that measure, their conclusion is we're as a nation in the middle of the pack, and Maryland is in the middle of the pack of the United States. The only state they point to that they think has really done a good job at this is Massachusetts, where they went through a process like this a generation ago and have really stuck with some of the reforms that Maryland is now contemplating.
There is one among the nine Democrats running for governor who has a completely different analysis. Former Montgomery County School Board member Valerie Irvin says underfunding is not the reason schools have problems.
The real story here in Maryland is it's not about the money. Because if you go online and check the per pupil spending in each of our 24 counties, you will see that they're not that far off from each other. So we have some of the highest per pupil spending in the nation. We still have a persistent achievement gap. We still have struggling schools. So it can't be about just money. It's got to be about more than that.
Andy Green, Irvin says the problem is what happens outside the classroom. She says the state needs to invest in community schools. And actually, Jim Shea, former head of the Venable Law Firm, who is another candidate, also stresses community schools.
Community schools, I think, have been shown, particularly here in Baltimore, to be very effective. The wraparound services for this student, the child, but also for the family. So often the kids come to school, and because of what's happened at home, they're not really ready to learn.
There's definitely some truth in all of that. If you talk to Dr. Sonia Santelises, the CEO of the city school system, she's very focused on a lot of the factors that these two candidates discuss in terms of issues at home, psychological problems they may have had, particularly in Baltimore, as a result to exposure to trauma of one sort or another. And those definitely are major factors in how kids perform in the classroom. And I don't think you would find much disagreement about that among the other candidates, too. But that's not the full picture here. One of the other things the Kerwin Commission has found is that our state funding does not adequately compensate school districts for these kinds of difficulties that they face in terms of kids who come from poverty, from difficult family situations, from traumatic experiences in their life, that we do need to be supporting schools in our poorer jurisdictions more than we do now. That is one of the major findings. So, it might not be so much that the aggregate amount of money we're spending on schools is inadequate, although I think in the end they will probably conclude that it is. It's also that the way we distribute it among the counties may be relatively equal, as Ms. Irvin says, but it is not necessarily equitable.
So do you see this shaping up as a big campaign issue?
I think that you're not going to see a whole lot of disagreement among these Democratic candidates about whether we need to spend more money on schools. I think Ms. Irvin's comments aside, there's a lot of unanimity on that issue. Now, whoever emerges to run against Larry Hogan in the fall, we are going to see some report from the Kerwin Commission between now and then. And so I expect that that's going to shape this debate much more sharply than it is now.
That's Andy Green, opinion editor for the Baltimore Sun, here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're analyzing interviews On The Record did with all nine Democrats running for governor, with a focus on their education plans. Many of the candidates can claim experience in education. State Senator Rich Madalino is the only candidate who's part of the Kerwin Commission. Mm-hmm. Ben Jealous notes that when he headed the NAACP, he helped jurisdictions improve their education funding. Krishanti Vignaraja stresses that both her parents, immigrants from Sri Lanka, were public school teachers in Baltimore. Jim Shea's leadership experience includes chairing the University of Maryland Board of Regents. Ralph Jaffe taught political science in Baltimore County. And Alec Ross remembers.
I was a sixth grade teacher in West Baltimore. I taught in room 308 at Booker T. Washington Middle School.
Many of the Democrats campaign with personal stories about why they're passionate about education. Ben Jealous said it began with his grandparents.
What got us out of poverty was when we became a double union household. And what made that possible was at a time when the dean of the University of Maryland School of Law was very clear he neither wanted Negro students nor night students. And my grandfather was both in the late 1950s. My grandfather hung in there for 1 year. That was enough to qualify him to become a probation officer and thus an AFSCME member.
Valerie Irvin says she was inspired to run for political office after her young son was unfairly put into remedial reading.
My youngest son came home one day and said he was put in the lowest reading group in his school, and I knew that could not be the case because this is a child who read the Washington Post sports page at 8 years old. And so I was very fortunate that I was able to have him tested on my own outside the system. And when those test results came back, my son was reading at the 10th grade level as an 8-year old.
Prince George's County Executive Rashern Baker actually needed remedial reading.
When I was very young, in the first and second grade, I actually repeated those grades because I struggled with reading. And sometimes children can be, you know, they can be challenging. And I got into fights, and I got kicked out of a lot of schools.
So fast forward, under Baker's leadership, Prince George's schools have gotten a lot of bad publicity.
They have. One of County Executive Baker's major initiatives was an effort to take control of the school system in a way that most county executives or the mayor of Baltimore, using a degree of power that most county executives and the mayor of Baltimore don't have. He wanted to be able to personally pick the superintendent. He wanted to really be held accountable for the school system and its progress. And as he notes, the Prince George's County school system had been very unstable and very troubled for a long time, had gone through superintendents at an incredible rate, had no stability, no ability to make the sort of changes that were necessary. Now, he brought in Kevin Maxwell, who is the former superintendent in Anne Arundel County, very highly regarded. But now, toward the end of his term, as he is running for governor, there have been a series of scandals in the Prince George's County schools, including a grade inflation cheating scandal, including what some people consider to be improper raises for some of Mr. Maxwell's deputies. It got to the point where all three of the Democrats running to replace Mr. Baker were asking that that Kevin Maxwell be fired or resign. He eventually did agree to step down at the end of the school year. The NAACP said get him out of there right away. It's a difficult situation for Rashern Baker because this was supposed to be one of his major calling cards in this election.
Yeah, let's hear part of what he said when I asked him about it.
We've gone from 125,000 students when Dr. Maxwell came in to where we are at 132,000 students in our school system. The biggest issue we had in the school system at the time was the fact that our truancy rate was one of the highest in the state, and our dropout rate was one of the highest in the state. We've seen a steady decline in truancy rates and a steady decline in dropout rates over the last 5 years.
Andy, Baker has held a slim lead in all the polling that I've seen. Could Prince George's schools be a deciding issue in the primary?
It's one of the few issues in which you see any of these candidates really directly criticize each other. Some of the other candidates have pointed to this as a management failure by Rashern Baker, but none of them have been anywhere near so pointed about this as Larry Hogan has been, as the Republican Party has been. If Rashern Baker makes it through this primary, he's going to need a very sharp answer for the general election.
Okay, we need to take a quick break here, and when we come back, we'll look at vocation and higher education. Andy Green of the Baltimore Sun is sticking with us. I'm Sheila Cast. Stay tuned on The Record.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking this morning about how the Democrats running in the primary for governor want to change higher education and career education in Maryland. We've talked to all 9 Democrats about their priorities. Andy Green, opinion editor of the Baltimore Sun, is here to give us some context. Before we talk about college and student loan debt, let's talk about what some see as a way to avoid debt, more emphasis on vocational education and apprenticeships. Here's Alec Ross.
The rhetoric and policies of the Democratic Party for the last 20 to 30 years have been, you go to college and you're a winner, you don't go to college and you're a loser. So the thing that really sets me apart is I want to make Maryland the center of America's best apprenticeship programs and pathways into the skilled trades.
Krish Vignaraja,
You know, my father would tell you his students in Baltimore City, some of them weren't going to go to college. They were going to go into the trades. And those are well-paying jobs, and we need to stop stigmatizing that option. If a child wants to become a plumber or an electrician, those are the kinds of jobs that can support a family of two or four.
Ben Jealous.
People need to understand that there are plumbers who make more than people with PhDs, because the PhD is having a hard time finding a job. But for the plumber, there's always a demand.
Andy, there seems to be a lot of interest in apprenticeships
yes.
and career education. Do you see it as much of a campaign issue?
Alec Ross is probably the most developed in talking about this issue or most focused on this issue, though it's something that's shared by most of the candidates. And again, it's something that flows out of the Kerwin Commission recommendations. One of the things that the Kerwin Commission has set as a goal is for students to essentially, at the end of 10th grade, be ready to either do college-level coursework or to start career training. You know, again, as Mr. Ross said in the clip you just played, and I think a lot of his other candidates agree with him, the rhetoric in the Democratic Party about the overall importance of college has perhaps gone too far, and there's a correction back toward looking at the trades, at skilled work, as being a real area of opportunity in this economy.
Another widespread idea is free tuition, especially for community college. Several candidates, including Jealous, argue that free education through grade 12 isn't enough, that you really need free education through grade 14. Jealous says he'd pay for it by pulling money from the prison budget and by taxing the 1%, the wealthy.
We've got to end the era of massive student debt, and I aim to do that by cutting our bloated prison budget by $660 million. How? Same way I helped other states do it as president of the NAACP. We'll get bipartisan consensus to push through criminal justice reform that will make us safer and save us money. We will also tax the 1% more.
Krish Vignaraja is an advocate of free community college.
I want to provide free community college, but also 1% student loans, because sadly, a Maryland student coming out of school on average has about $30,000 in student loans.
Are all the Democrats backing free community college?
Even Governor Hogan is backing free community college. He signed a bill at the end of this legislative session that moves Maryland pretty far down the road in that direction. It's not absolutely free community college, but it does provide funding for that last piece that many students need after other grants and scholarships to pay for community college. But that has some limitations. It's only targeted for people who are either right out of high school or close to it, which leaves a lot of people who could use these kinds of services out. Now, Ben Jealous, I would say, is the most aggressive on this particular issue of the candidates. He's of the Bernie Sanders school, quite literally. Senator Sanders has endorsed him. And he is, I think, ready to go farther than the others, both in terms of paying more of students' college, not just community college tuition, and explicitly saying we're going to possibly raise taxes on the wealthy to do that.
This is On the Record on WIP. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Andy Green, opinion editor of the Baltimore Sun. We're talking about the candidates running in the Democratic primary for governor. The primary is June 26th. The winner will face off against incumbent Republican Larry Hogan. Several Democrats say it's a priority to address student loan debt. Here's Senator Rich Madalino.
I think one of the things that we have right now in the transition from high school to higher education, especially for first-generation students, they don't know how to navigate what are affordable loans for the long term, what are different ways to assemble the money to afford higher education, and then monitoring to make sure that there aren't bad actors getting families to commit to debt that they can't afford.
Krish Vignaraja is proposing a state agency to finance tuition.
Just as we administer scholarship programs, we need to also provide 1% student loans, because right now private companies are profiteering off of student loans.
Is this a widespread idea?
I would say that probably the two candidates you mentioned there are most focused on this particular issue. Senator Madalino has suggested the creation of a state student loan ombuds person to help families work through these issues. He's also suggested ideas like creating a financing mechanism so that graduates can roll their student loan debt into a mortgage. And as you said, Ms. Vignaraja wants the state to get directly involved in the student loan business. You know, this is certainly a big issue with the Democratic Party nationally. We do get conflated a little bit in talking about student debt between community college and four-year colleges. You know, the community college is obviously much more affordable already and is becoming even more so as a result of the General Assembly's actions this year, which I'm sure Mr. Madalena would point out he had a big hand in getting enacted during this legislative session.
Rich Madalena is also the only candidate who, in our interviews, raised the need for the state to find a way forward in the lawsuit brought by the HBCUs, the historically black yes. colleges and universities. He says the state should be prepared to invest $1 billion in HBCUs.
Governor Hogan has proposed a $100 million settlement. To give you some context, more than 20 years ago, the state of Mississippi settled their lawsuit for upwards of $750 million. So $100 million to settle the long-term structural discrimination is clearly not enough. We've proposed a multi-year plan for $1 billion to invest in upgrading the programs and the facilities at the HBCUs.
He's right. This is a major problem that the next governor is going to have to deal with. The state and the HBCUs have been at loggerheads for funding for years now, have been in federal court. They are working through trying to come to some sort of settlement to correct past discrimination in funding. But yes, it's going to cost a lot more than $100 million. And you know, the fact that Senator Madalena is attuned to this is, I think, indicative of the degree to which he is conversant in the issues that the legislature and governor are grappling with on a day-to-day basis in a way that the other candidates aren't, simply because of his experience in the legislature.
Another candidate, Ralph Jaffe, advocates abolishing the State Department of Education.
Each district should have their own department separately, and they should, you know, local government is your best form of government because you're closest to the people you're supposed to represent.
Before we're out of time, let me loop back to some of the points candidates made about changes needed for K through 12 teachers and principals. Alec Ross, a former teacher, called it odd that teacher pay is not linked to competency.
So the worst teacher who's in his 10th year of teaching makes better than the best teacher who's in their 9th year of teaching. And I do think that we need to reward performance in the classroom, teachers who do extremely well, and we need to hold teachers who year in, year out fail to teach their students effectively. We need to hold them to account.
James Jones, a drug addiction counselor from Baltimore, said teachers are underpaid.
We have a lot of children who graduate even now who can barely spell their name, anything. So I think there should be a lot of checks and balances there in education. But money is needed. We need better salaries for teachers.
And then Jim Shea puts a priority on retaining principals.
So we need to concentrate on training and producing and recruiting people to be principals. Those are skills that aren't exactly the same as teacher. They're leaders. They're a little bit like CEO.
What Alec Ross and Jim Shea are talking about are actually two sides of the same issue, and that is that in order for teachers to advance in their careers under the current system, the only real option they have is to go into administration, to become an assistant principal, to become a principal, to move into the central office. And so what that does is it robs a classroom of the most highly effective teachers, and it puts people in administration whose primary goals in life or primary skills are not necessarily in management and administration. They're in teaching. And again, both of these things flow to a great degree from the recommendations of the Kerwin Commission.
Well, given that there are so many candidates and they each have, in many ways, similar approaches to education, what do you think voters are going to be looking for?
I think it's going to be hard for voters to look at their platforms on education and say, you know, that's the one I agree with most. Generally, the differences between them are a matter of emphasis rather than disagreement. At the first televised debate a couple of weeks ago, they were asked a question about education. And if you didn't know much of the context of what's going on in this race, you might think they were giving different answers. You know, one person is talking about universal pre-K. One person is talking about community college and high school. And the truth is, these are all different parts of the same answer, and they all really do stem from the recommendations that the Kerwin Commission has put out. You know, in that sense, I think the Kerwin Commission has really set us up for a great discussion about education. The unfortunate thing is they did not have time to get us the bottom line answer of how much this is going to cost and how to pull it off.
Thanks for putting it in context for us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Andy Green is opinion editor of the Baltimore Sun. The Democratic primary is June 26th. Early voting begins June 14th. On the Record has more election coverage planned over the next few weeks. You'll hear more from our interviews with the candidates running in the Democratic primary as we discuss gun violence, jobs, and the opioid overdose epidemic. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow.
Listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.